I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are thrilled to be joined once again by the amazing Dr. Nancy O'Hara. If you haven't heard her visit to our podcast before, where she talked about folate receptor antibodies and the impact on pans and pandas, definitely check it out. We'll put a link to it in our bio. And, you know, I happen to be a guest on her podcast as well. So she's got a great podcast that we'll also put in the link to our, a link to in our bio or in our show notes, whatever they're called. You know what I'm saying. Let me tell you just a little bit about her. And then we're going to dive into a really interesting topic that I'm going to be honest, guys, I'm cheating the system here. It's something that Dr. O'Hara presented on at MAPS in the spring, and I did not attend. And she was like, you know, I could just tell you about it on your podcast. It's like, fantastic. Let's do that. So cheating the system here. So Dr. Nancy O'Hara is a board certified pediatrician. Prior to her medical career, Dr. O'Hara taught children with autism. She graduated with highest honors from Bryn Mawr College and is a member of the Alpha Omega Alpha Honor Society from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. She earned a master's degree in public health from the University of Pittsburgh. After residency, chief residency, and general pediatric fellowship at the University of Pittsburgh, Dr. O'Hara entered general private practice in 1993, and in 1998 began her consultative integrative practice solely for children with special needs. Since 1999, she's dedicated her functional medicine practice to the integration and holistic care of children with chronic illness and a neurodevelopmental disorders such as ADHD, PANS PANDAS, OCD, Lyme, and ASD. She's also a leader in the training of clinicians, both in the United States and abroad. Dr. O'Hara has written a comprehensive guidebook, Demystifying PANS PANDAS, a functional medicine desktop reference on basal ganglia encephalitis, which is available on Amazon in ebook or softcover formats. For more information on her membership and mentoring program, please visit droHara.com. And additionally, Dr. O'Hara, her research in folate receptor autoantibodies, which is what we grilled her about for our last episode, and PANS PANDAS was not so recently published. It was recently published the last time we got an updated bio from you. So welcome, Dr. O'Hara. I'm so excited that you suggested a way for me to cheat the system, and I can't wait to learn more about what you have learned about Alice in Wonderland syndrome.
Yep. Thank you, Dr. Barr, and I so appreciate you having me on again. And now that you've spent so much time telling everybody about me, our time is now up and we'll just go. Anyway, Alice in Wonderland syndrome was fascinating to me, and I had never heard about it until the last year. And, you know, as you mentioned, I've been mentoring a lot of clinicians all over the place, and I actually had a clinician in Texas that reached out to me about a kid that had this. And so I started researching it. And since I've had six kids, all of whom I treated similarly, all of whom have gotten better. So, first of all, what is it?
Yes.
It is, you know, Alice in Wonderland, the Lewis Carroll book, the movie, all of that. It's where children go down a rabbit hole, but mostly are having visual hallucinations. So they're really seeing things as much bigger or much smaller than what they are. So this first kid I saw, he was seeing his mom like the size of a pencil head. That's what he kept calling her. And that's what he literally saw it as. And he saw the ceiling fans coming toward him, like they were moving toward him. And other things, like little things like rocks, seem like huge boulders. So, but some kids will have auditory hallucinations where, you know, things sound louder than they are or softer than they are. Some will have smell differences. It's just all about distorted perceptions. So thinking about, if you haven't seen Alice in Wonderland, see it. And what's really interesting when I started researching this is Lewis Carroll probably suffered from this due to migraines. So migraines is one of the things that people talk about a lot as being a cause of Alice in Wonderland syndrome. But my point is, as I'm sure you agree, migraines are just another symptom.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a root cause. You know, you've got migraines because you have a magnesium deficiency or you have inflammation from some other reason. Or what I thought in this kid is that he actually had tick-borne disease. So I went back in the literature and it has been seen. There's a couple of case studies with strep. There's a couple of case studies with Lyme, with borreliosis. There's a bunch of reports with migraines, obviously. But what I thought this kid had was babesia. And you know, when we think about babesiosis, we think about, dysautonomia, dysregulation of the automatic or autonomic nervous system. So those kids have a lot more temperature regulation problems. They have a lot more issues with, fainting or near fainting. They may have, an increase in heart rate when they stand up. They may have rashes when they get out of the shower. They may have also mast cell activation, so many things. But this particular child had gone hiking in Arkansas 3 years before I saw him. And shortly after that, he had a couple of symptoms. Mom doesn't remember a rash, but he was like wobbly and had a little bit of a fever, malaise, but she didn't make anything of it. Then 6 months later, he had more fatigue and he actually got put on doxycycline for several weeks because somebody recognized that maybe he had a tick when they went hiking and put him on that. But as we know, doxycycline or any antibiotic, in my opinion, does not fully treat tick-borne diseases. So that probably wasn't enough. And then it just getting worse and worse and worse. And he said, by the time I saw him 3 years later, there was never a time when things looked normal size. Everything was distorted. Everything was off. And this particular child actually had no money. They really were suffering. And so I said, you know what? I'm just going to send you some herbs free of charge. And they couldn't afford to do any specialty testing. So of course, as we know, tick-borne diseases, Bartonella, Babesia don't often show up on conventional labs. But he did have some evidence of inflammation. They had tried magnesium, that didn't work. They had tried LDN, that didn't work. They hadn't tried homeopathy. Want to be very clear about that. But they had tried a lot of supplements that he had gotten a little bit better with ibuprofen, for example. So there was some inflammation, but he was really suffering. I sent him a group of supplements. Cryptolepis, I think, is one of the best herbs. There's multiple research by Ma, by Zhang, by Feng, showing that cryptolepis is actually better than doxycycline or cefuroxime in treating Borrelia, and very good for treating Babesia. So I started him on that. The other one I like is Hetunia. But I also was worried. I looked at where he had been hiking, and there was a possibility of relapsing fever, Borrelia, as well as Babesia. So I also put him on cat's claw. And then I rotated in Alcornea. You could rotate in Artemisia. I had rotated in Alcornea. So I, with Babesia, it's a parasite. It's a lot like malaria. And so I'm always putting in some kind of anti-parasitic. And I rotate those around the moon cycles. So the 3 days before the day of, the 3 days after, the new moon and the full moon. So I put him on that. And I also put him on berbapenella or some type of detoxing. And he added them one drop at a time, one at a time. And I talked to him 3 months later. And he had just gotten to 12 drops of each once a day. And he said things were less small. Things were less far away. And I said, then keep going. Let's go to twice a day and then eventually three times a day. So I talked to him again 3 months later and he was even better. He had gotten through some illnesses. Usually when he had an illness like a virus, as with all our kids, he flared. Things got either smaller or bigger. He was getting worse. And then finally, a little after the 6 months, when he had been on 12 drops a day of all of those, I just said three times a day for 3 months, it was gone. I had a consult with mom. Everything was back to normal size. Now, in the literature, people will say this will just go away on its own. So I can already hear the skeptics in the back of my head saying, well, it just went away on its own. Even though it was there for 3 days, 3 years, it went away on its own. But then what I do is I start to wean things one at a time. So I first took off cleansing support because which is the berberpanella, because I thought, well, this isn't doing anything. I'll leave the herbs and we'll take that out. Within a day, all the symptoms came back. So we put that right back in, and a few weeks later, we took out Hetunia, and all the symptoms came right back. So in my opinion, that is proof that this was working. That it wasn't just going away on its own. And so since that time, with some moderate, deviations, I've treated six kids in a similar fashion, and they've all gotten better. They've all had a decrease in these Alice in Wonderland syndromes. And I really think it's another manifestation of sort of the intrusive thoughts, the hallucinations that we talk about, those sort of things. It's in the same realm. And if you look at like the CAT scan and the MRI studies of kids with Alice in Wonderland, because the neurologist will do that before they'll put them on a medication for migraines. And oh, by the way, this particular kid had been tried on multiple antipsychotics, SSRIs, amitriptyline, nothing had worked. But when you look at the literature, the area where the inflammation is right where we see the inflammation with our kids with PANS pandas. It's right in that caudate, putamen, hypothalamus, basal ganglia. So I just really want people to think that one, we should ask about Alice in Wonderland. We should ask, does things look different? Do things sound different to you? Ask it in different ways, because one of the things that this family didn't know is that this kid had also been soaking the sheets at night, which is a classic babesia symptom. But he had two sets of sheets, and he had been hiding one every day. He'd get up early, hide his sheets, put the dry sheets on, never washed them. They just dried naturally, and then keep switching them. Never told his parents.
And when you say soaking the sheets, are you saying bedwetting or sweating?
Sweating.
Sweating.
Sweating. Yeah, he wasn't a bedwetter. And what didn't have bedwetting is one of his pan signs either. But really asking about Alice in Wonderland in different ways. And then also in kids with migraines, they're probably some of that aura be thinking about tick-borne disease in the background, or any of the diseases you and I, talk to kids about, viruses, mycoplasma, strep, whatever. But definitely babesia, or any of the tick-borne diseases. Even though I never tested this kid, the next few kids that I had the money to do testing. I did have positive babesia in three of the others, and it went away after treating. So I'm about a year into all six of these kids now, maybe 6 to 9 months with a couple of them. And like I said, they're all getting better with herbal treatment. But none of them had tried homeopathy first.
Well, and that's what I'm going to jump in and just say. So like we've had, I don't know exactly how many, I'd have to like go through all of my providers, but we've had kids with this, and I'm going to like, I've never actually shared this. I've had this. I've actually experienced this. It was, I remember having a time. So I both have migraines, and I likely had PANS as a child. And so homeopathy is how I recovered from PANS. I'm still working on the migraines, right? But I definitely had, I have visual auras and like distortions with migraines for sure. But I had a time where I was having a flare, and I remember being in the grocery store and feeling like things weren't where they were supposed to be. Like I was trying to find the broccoli and it was right in front of me, but it felt like it was like swirling around or like in a weird place. I remember saying like, oh, I need to go down that aisle, but that aisle is too narrow. How will I ever fit in that aisle? And then feeling almost like I was getting like sucked up to the top corner of a room, and like I was looking down on things, or yeah, like things were farther. Like the distances were just really, the perceptions are really different. So I've experienced this. And we've had dozens of clients that we've worked with who've had this experience. And there are lots of remedies that can actually help. And so this is something that homeopathy can be very, very effective for. And so like that's just, there's not like one remedy. There's dozens of remedies that can address depending on like the specific nature that somebody's
Right.
experiencing these symptoms, right? And so that's one really great thing about the homeopathic intake being so detailed is that we get a lot of this information. So I'm glad that anybody who might not be at that place where they're using homeopathy yet gets the opportunity to hear about this so they can be asking. So you mentioned that obviously these kids that you found it in or have tick-borne illness, but there's also migraines associated with it and other things that can be related to it. So it's not necessarily that there is tick-borne illness that causes it, correct? So it's
It's
not
just one of the causes,
one of
right?
the things. So like there's
Right.
lots of different things that can contribute to this presentation, the symptom. Has there been any research though that's been definitive to show like what's actually happening? Like you mentioned inflammation being demonstrated at certain areas of the brain. I think of the putamen and the basal ganglia,
Right.
maybe the caudate as well, I think you might have said too.
Right.
Is that what's causing it? Like like an inflammatory response at that?
That's what I think. Yes. Now
Okay.
it may be causing changes in the neurotransmitters also,
Okay.
because what conventional doctors will use are SSRIs and things like that, and in some cases they do work. So there's going to be some serotonin, dopamine abnormalities. However, I think that again is secondary to the inflammation, and I haven't met a kid that has this that it doesn't get a little bit better. Like with ibuprofen or an anti-inflammatory herb or nutraceutical or something like that. So I do think the base is inflammation within the brain. And that's what like the MRI and the CT scan said. But what's causing the inflammation? And what was interesting for me in the literature is just that they touched on strep, they touched on Borrelia. But it was all about migraines and nothing about babesia. And I actually have found that to be the most common underneath all of it. But
And then,
again,
I'm going to say, and we have to go even one layer deeper because why does it not everybody who has Babesia come down with this
exactly.
presentation? So we still have like, yes, this might be a factor, and there's like some susceptibility that you have to
No
have
question.
ability, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just we could go round and round and round, like which layer, how much deeper are we going to go how to figure this out?
But it has to start with the susceptibility. There's no question about that, which is why I agree with you that homeopathy is so powerful. But if they come to me, I can't immediately say, "Well, listen, go see Jennifer Barr and you'll get better and then come back to me." I try first, and then if they don't get better, I'll send them to you. But
And people have got to go with what works best for them and how they relate to it. But it's great to know that there's multiple options to help people get some relief.
yeah, absolutely. But definitely it is in susceptible kids. I just whenever I try to speak to the MDs and DOs among us that really don't see outside the box and see migraine as a root cause. And that's where I'm saying, no, let's really look deeper. Let's look
Why
at
do you have
why
migraine?
is this kid getting it? Like your migraines may have stemmed from your PANS as a child. And that inflammation, despite all the great homeopathy, despite everything you've done, just, there was some amount of whether there's still some inflammation there, still some scar tissue, whatever it may be, that's not totally resolved. But you had that susceptibility. Then you got the PANS, then you get the migraines, and so we got to go back to getting even deeper, with all these kids.
Dr. O'Hare, help us PANS parents understand how Alice in Wonderland syndrome is related to PANS.
Yeah, so if it and I still think in PANS, in deference to Sue Sweeto, who will be on my podcast next Wednesday, or the one that lands next Wednesday, it does need to be of abrupt onset. We all agree that with mold, with tick-borne disease, with strep and other symptoms that were missed, it can be much more subacute. But to actually get that definition, it should be abrupt onset. So I'm saying that when we think about the anxiety, the OCD, the tics, the handwriting deterioration, the bedwetting, all the symptoms that we have, we need to add this as one of the symptoms in the sensory abnormalities. And we need to ask, our kids, when they're, whatever their symptom may be, they're raging, when they're not in a flare, go back and ask, did things look any different to you than they used to? Did things, asking it in a little bit different ways. How, they hear, you hear something. How did that sound to you? Oh, mom, it sounds so much louder than it did yesterday. Again, that's going to fall into this category of Alice in Wonderland. But the visual is what's most striking and most not harmful, but just like irritating to the kid. And so it is in that sensory category of the criteria for PANS, and is something we should be asking about with the differences in the way they perceive things.
And I think it's really interesting that you said like irritating and like I think you've mentioned something like almost like rage could be associated with this and the reality is like it could show up in so many different ways too, right? Like when I experienced it, it was scary. And so like there could be like fear that would be presenting with this underneath it. There could be anger or frustration because things aren't where you expect them to be or what you expect them to look like. Or if you're saying something like some kids have I've had clients where the kids were saying something like this is so small, and the parents just like it's but no, it's not what you're talking about, not realizing it was a symptom. And so then they got angry because they were being told like that their experience of the world wasn't real.
Like I had a patient a couple of weeks ago who, I asked all the questions. Parents had filled out the very, very long questionnaires, just like they do for you. And nothing in there was mentioned, but I just had this sense. Anyway, the kid, I took the kid into the bathroom because we were doing a Woods lamp exam. And so the parents weren't in there with me. He was only like 4 or 5. And I said, "Is there anything else that seems weird to you?" And she go, he said to me, he said, "I can't tell my mom and dad, but my mom's head looks really, really tiny, but she'll be mad at me if I tell her. And my dad's body looks really, really big." So he was so embarrassed to even say it. So you gotta ask it. You gotta, as a parent, not put any judgment on it. And that's something I say to all parents. The first line should be, "I get it," even when you don't. Or "I understand," or "I'm with you," or something, because then they may be more likely to tell you this really weird stuff. Whereas if you, in your own fear, in your own, uncomfortableness, you dismiss it, you may not hear all the symptoms that they're feeling or sensing.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's one of the things that Hahnemann even talked about in his writings for homeopathy, that no matter what the person is experiencing, if it's different than your experience, you have to treat them as if you believe them. And especially, he was talking about like people with hallucinations and delusions and like mental illness. But the reality is like you have to meet somebody and like treat them as if you believe them in order to actually get their experience and understand it. Otherwise, like if you put people in a defensive place, you're right. Like they're just gonna go up and you're not gonna get the opportunity to help them.
And it's just it's really, as parents, as practitioners, and you do it, it's listening and just being present with where they are, and some of this will come out. Absolutely.
So let's that our kiddos are communicating to us something that sounds like Alice in Wonderland syndrome. Are there certain tests that we need to do?
Well, I always, I still would go back to the same test that I would do at least if a child presents with PANS or PANDAS. So I would look to see if they have mycoplasma. I would look to see if they have strep, especially if they were exposed to it. I would definitely look at all their inflammatory markers. But what I really wanted, what I expressed at the Medical Academy of Pediatric Special Needs, and what I expressed to other, practitioners that I, and parents that I talk to, is that tick-borne disease is particularly Babesia, are much more likely to be present than we've given it credit for. So think about that. Think about the area you're in. You know, in the Pacific Northwest or out west, it's prevalent. In the Northeast where I am, it's prevalent. In the Midwest, it's prevalent, but it is present all over the world. And so, you know, but I also wanted to present this case because this was a case that I did it just based on symptoms. You know, I didn't have any tests because these specialty labs can be very expensive. And a lot of parents can't afford that. So if you're doing something that's safe and effective, either herbally or homeopathically, get the baseline tests, in my opinion. You know, get the inflammatory markers, the other things, make sure you're not dealing with mycoplasma or, you know, COVID or whatever it may be, but then treat safely and hopefully effectively.
So you mentioned a couple of things with treatment, and before we even go down that road, we talked about imaging. So like, if they have this symptom, they don't necessarily need to like run off to get an MRI or anything.
Oh, please don't.
Yeah. Okay.
No,
I mean, to hear, because it's absolutely a scary thing. So like, an MRI is not going to change the way you're treated. It's just going to like,
not at all
that big of a big thing.
Yeah. And also I was really just mentioning it to say that you know, in studies that have been done in kids that have been done in, there's inflammation there, but don't go off and do it to prove there's inflammation. In my opinion, there's inflammation. There's susceptibility, and then there's something we need to treat.
Right. Our job is just to like hear all the things that people are going to be wondering. And there's going to be a parent who heard this is like, oh, I need to go get an MRI for my kid because they're having this thing.
Yep.
MRIs are not going to direct treatment. They're not going to like change anything. It's not going to give you any significantly substantial useful information that the symptoms itself won't give you, or some baseline testing that Dr. O'Hara mentioned. So you'd mentioned a couple of things that are used for treatment. You said like in conventional care, SSRIs is the common medication that's used, or if they believe that it's gonna be migraine associated, we're looking at triptans, which modulate serotonin, right? So we're looking at just changing serotonin is the primary thing that in the conventional system that we're looking for, right?
Right.
On the more functional side, we're looking more for ways to address any infectious causes and the inflammation. Is that accurate?
Correct. Correct.
So the treatment would be based on what you find and what those particular viruses or bacteria are more likely to be like susceptible to.
Exactly. And what was interesting in that case I was presenting is the functional medicine provider they were seeing had tried all the nutraceuticals, you know, like we talk about 5-HTP, we talk about magnesium, we talk about inositol, we talk about, you know, all those things that you think might work. In these kids, that didn't work as well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think really getting at the susceptibility and the root cause is really important with these kids.
So when it comes to homeopathy, for anybody who that's like their mainstay for how they want to approach things, it's not going to be based off of any of these testing. It's going to be based off of the specific way that you experience it and the totality of your symptoms. So there, I can think just off of the top of my head, like 5 different remedies that can address this. And there's even more than that. And so all of them have a slightly different presentation, and they're going to have other symptoms that they address. So the remedy that was effective for me when I was in that particular state was agaricus, but I also was having like increased strength and like lots of like, you know, intense energy and like some mild aggression at the same time that I was having it, versus somebody who's going to have a lot more fear. They're going to need a different remedy. And like, and if they're specifically seeing things like they're looking down or they're taller, it's going to be different than if it's like they're farther away or like they need to. One of the symptoms for agaricus is that like they saw a spoon full of water and felt like they had to cross a lake is one of the symptoms and the provings for it. So if there's other hallucinations, other physical symptoms, those things are going to be taken into consideration for the remedy selection. So we can't just be like, here's the top 5 remedies for Alice in Wonderland syndrome, because we have to look at the totality, because there are so many things going on that can contribute to it.
And I so appreciate you saying that, because, you know, that's why I refer to you, why I think you guys do it so well, is because you are looking at constitutional classical, you're looking at the whole child, you're looking at all the other symptoms not just this seeing things differently. And you're also looking at how they see it differently. Like you said, you know, it may be from above or from far away or whatever. And that is so important that families don't just run out to, you know, the health food store and pick up a little bottle of a homeopathic because you said you improved with that one. It exactly. really is working with somebody that can put everything together. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's vital to have the totality in consideration because what we're trying to do with homeopathy is help you actually heal to reduce and address that susceptibility. That's like the original underlying cause, as far as we know currently, that made it so you have this particular presentation, regardless of what the trigger happened to be. And if you were to go and take something like I just mentioned, agaricus, because you have this, maybe it would help, but it might only help palliatively, or it might do nothing. And so really, for it to not just be palliative, but also to be healing, it really has to take that totality into consideration. And, you know, we want you to feel better, and like taking something just because it's not likely to hurt you doesn't mean like it, the longer you deal with things, the harder things get. So exactly. Speaking of that, does the presence of this syndrome mean anything about the severity or the prognosis for the underlying condition?
It increases the concern of severity.
Yeah.
It is more of a severe symptom than a child that just has anxiety or OCD. And as such, whereas another child may get better from babesiosis that doesn't have all these symptoms in 3 months, you know, this is going to take a little bit longer. And homeopathically, I mean, you can address that whether you have to try different remedies or different strengths of the remedies, but it is a more severe presentation.
Yeah.
For sure.
It is usually like this particular part of the case can usually clear relatively quickly, depending on how long you've experienced it with homeopathy. Yep. But it's usually not the one and only remedy you're ever going to need. It's usually like a more acute, more aggressive state that we have to help the body move through so that we can then address like the calmer PANS state, if you will, if there's anything.
Is there anything calm about PANS? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. But am I correct in that homeopathically you would also, you know, increase strength? Like
if we needed to, if it hadn't resolved fully yet, then absolutely. So with homeopathy, the body responds for a period of time. It's just a nudge for the body to like heal itself and to restore balance. Eventually we stop being sensitive to that particular nudge and we need a new nudge. And so oftentimes we'll see the ups and downs, we'll see some symptoms start to come back. And then, we would need to change the potency so the body's sensitive to it again and get going in the right direction once again. So yes, usually there's at least a couple of potency changes or dosing strategy changes to help move past this layer of the presentation for PANS.
Got it.
Dr. O'Hare, what do you want all providers to know about this syndrome?
That it is real. That it can present in lots of different ways, as we're saying, rage, anxiety, fear, shame, because the child isn't being heard or isn't able to express. You know, think about some of our kids with autism that also have PANS or PANDAS. You know, they may be non-speaking at the time, so they can't express that everything in the world is coming at them. You know, so think about this distorted perception in any kid, especially kids that have other evidence of dysautonomia, other evidence of temperature control issues, syncope, you know, fainting or near syncope, severe GI symptoms even, you know, because that can be a you know, part of the vagal nerve. Mm-hmm. So anytime you're seeing any of that, ask more about it, you know, and if the child is non-speaking, one of the six kids is non-speaking and her parents say she's always going like this, you know, and, you know, I thought maybe this is something she's feeling. And actually I had another kid who I didn't treat for Alice in Wonderland because I didn't know any better back then, but I just saw her this week, and she is a non-speaking adult now with autism, but she's a speller. So she's able to communicate fully now. And she actually spelled for me. She said, "Do you remember?" And I totally remember the day and the time where she had locked herself in our bathroom at the office and we couldn't get her out. She said, "It's because all your ceiling fans were coming at me." And I thought, wow, you know, like maybe there are more people that I'm not thinking about it because they can't tell me either because of their PAN symptoms or because they're of their autism.
I'm glad you brought up the like interacting with things that can be maybe a hint. Laughing. I'm wondering if laughing also like the like out of nowhere, unexplained laughing could possibly also.
It's possible. Yeah. And it, we call those kids gelastic seizures. I had another kid that had that, and we treated her in a similar way. I never really put that together with Alice in Wonderland, but you're right. It may well have been that too. And she got better on this same protocol.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, my brain is expanding, like all the ways that it could be a sign to like dig a little bit deeper. So yeah, like the laughing could, I mean, I'm even wondering if like thoughtless staring could be, if there's like some experience that's happening, that's just not, I mean, it's just, we're not saying that any of these things mean that that's for sure what it is. It's just an opportunity to dig a little bit deeper and ask another question.
Yeah.
Perfect way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm even thinking about at one point, because I don't know anything about Alice in Wonderland. One point Avery was telling me that she felt like she kept getting pulled up to the corner of the room and she was watching what was going on. But like I would have never known to ask more questions around that. So it's interesting.
Right.
Something like that could even be it.
Right. And sometimes as a parent especially, or even for me, you got to pause and figure out how else you can ask the question, you know, and then once you've asked it a few times, maybe it becomes a little bit easier. But, you know, kids shut down pretty quickly if they think they're not being heard. And so it may take a few times of discussion before you'll get the full breadth of what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
I think coming from a place of curiosity that's more open-ended is generally the most effective, because then it's there's less opportunity for judgment to be interpreted. We're just like, what's going on? What are you experiencing?
Yeah.
Tell me about that, you know, versus like, are you seeing something? And it's like,
exactly.
You start to manage people's emotions about that.
That's a very good point. And making it seem cool as rather than a negative,
especially
you
for
know?
You.
Yeah. Oh, that's, you know, like you said, oh, that's interesting. Or, oh, that's cool. Or, you know, for my now adult son, that's sick. You know, however we got to say it to get into their vernacular. I don't know. So
what's the main takeaway for parents if they think they're seeing this in their kids?
See a qualified professional, come see you guys, you know, dig deeper. Do the detective work to really try to figure out what the root cause of it is. And if something's not working, step back and try something else. Not necessarily a new practitioner, especially if you're, you know, with a practitioner like Jennifer or, you know, several of the wonderful functional medicine practitioners out there. Just say, you know, this isn't working. If at 3 months when I saw this particular child, he wasn't any different, I would have switched things up.
Yeah.
And after another 3 months, then I would have sent him to Jennifer if it still wasn't working. I do give myself a little bit of time. But anyway, you know what I mean? We have to keep searching, because I may think it's babesia, but I've had other kids where it's not, you know, and it may be some other germ. It may be some other cause of inflammation. It may be some other root susceptibility. So the main takeaway is just keep listening non-judgmentally, and keep trying, but definitely make sure that you're really getting at the root. Because if you're just treating the surface, like if your child has migraines, for example, you're not even watching this podcast because your child has PANS or PANDAS. Your kid has migraines. you should be digging deeper. What's causing those migraines? What is underneath it? And what are the other symptoms? You know, for me and this kid, it was putting together this Alice in Wonderland with the severe night sweats that his other functional medicine provider and his parents never knew he had. But because I was able to talk to him about it and hear his symptoms as interesting or cool, he, for whatever reason, or maybe I was just the sixth person he had saw and he's like, you know, screw it, I'm going to talk to her. I don't know. But for whatever reason, he was able to share it with me. And and so being, you know, as a parent, being open to hearing all of those things without judgment. And that goes to stuff we've talked about before, is that as parents, we have so much PTSD and we have so much anxiety and fear and worry and trauma ourselves, that, you know, give yourself a break. If the first time your child says it to you, you like freak out, you know, then go back, take a deep breath at a time when you're in a place of calmness, ask again in a non-judgmental, non, you know, overbearing way, but just say, hey, that was really cool the other day when you told me about when you were on the ceiling looking down. Like, I'd like to talk about that more. I may have experienced that. You know, sometimes, even if you haven't, if you say, you know, I may have had something like that, they may be more likely to engage.
Yeah. So. I think one thing I would add, and you can tell me if I'm completely off base, but one thing I would generally tell people too is, I say all the time, don't borrow trouble. And there's some parents who have had experience with this symptom or see something like this with their kids that they borrow trouble because they think, does this mean my kid has schizophrenia? Does this mean my kid has bipolar one disorder? Does this mean my kid has schizoaffective disorder? No, it does not necessarily mean that. It means your kid is susceptible to experiencing this type of thing, and there are ways to address it, and we don't need to worry about like any of those things because it does not necessarily mean those things.
Absolutely. Very, very well said. And yeah, you really don't need to go down that rabbit hole as you go down the rabbit hole of Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. This is something that can happen to our kids with brain inflammation, autoimmune encephalitis, and doesn't go to schizophrenia, bipolar, autism, any of that. We just need to figure out how they're expressing it so that then as it gets better with root cause treatments, that they can also express that to you because it can get better.
Yeah, it can get better. It does get better. Lots of ways that it can get better. Don't give up if your kid is experiencing this and stay curious. That's what I'm hearing.
So true. So true.
All right. Well, Dr. O'Hara, I'm going to have to come up with lots more reasons to have you come and join us. So I'm going to be paying attention every time I get a chance to talk to you. I always enjoy our conversations. So thank you so much for coming back and talking to our community about something that is important for them to pay attention to. So thank you.
Thanks for inviting me. I love talking to you too. So anytime.
Take care, everybody.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.